Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 9 of the Pause.com Entertainment Podcast. I almost forgot the name of our show right there. We are your hosts,
Tony,
and I am Lou, and we're going to get going right off the bat. We're not going to dilly-dally other than me talking right now because we have a lot to talk about today. I have no shout-outs or anything, so I'm just going to remind people to email us at podcast@pause.com.
And I do want to give a shout-out to Sue, who told us that her favorite entertainment moment of last week was when you quoted Back to the Beach.
Now, was that a legitimate favorite entertainment moment?
It really was, yeah.
She wasn't making fun of me?
No, not at all.
Oh, that's good.
Not at all.
That was a great movie. You know, it's kind of a weird movie, but it was...
It's probably one that most people don't even remember.
I know. Probably most people never even saw it, but it was actually really funny. I liked that movie. But, well, thank you, Susan. I appreciate that. Just a reminder again, you can send us email to podcast@pause.com and visit us on Facebook and whatever, become a fan of our page. they're changing the homepage on Facebook, so now I'm really confused, but that's fine.
Please leave us reviews on iTunes.
Which means you have to subscribe first. So do that.
No, you don't even have to subscribe.
Oh, you don't?
To leave a review, you don't.
Oh, I thought you did.
No. We want you to subscribe.
No, I think you do.
You don't.
Well, why would they let you leave a review of something you're not subscribed to?
I could leave a review of something I never even bought.
But I don't think that applies to podcasts.
It does.
Okay.
You want to battle
it out? I think next week there's going to be a correction.
And it won't be from me.
No, I think it will be from you. Okay, so what have you been playing video games wise?
Right into video games.
Yeah, you got to go.
I have a couple iPhone games I want to talk about this week. First is Edge. Edge is a little 3D kind of, you're moving around a cube and you got to get to kind of an end stage. And you're going through a world of like different levels and that.
Do you like flip the cube? Like,
yes.
Flip.
And I have to say, one of the reasons I love this game is the controls.
Yeah.
You just kind of like move your finger in a direction and that's the direction the cube moves.
Uh-huh.
But there are different, the cube can go like upstairs and
oh, that's
like
cool.
Up on higher cubes. And then there's switches.
That like make a magic slinky.
Exactly. Yeah, like a cube slinky. And then there are different switches, which will change the environment a little and, you know.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. And it's, you know, the graphics are fairly simplistic. But
is it on like a tiled playfield kind of thing?
Yes.
And does the playfield have edges where like if you're on a skinny part, like you can't go to the side kind of thing?
You could go off the side
and
then you die.
Oh, yeah. That's bad.
Yeah. And what's great, after each level, it gives you a grade. And there's little like gems, I guess, that you pick up. So you want to get all the gems and get to the end in a certain amount of time in order to get like an A.
Right. But, well, that's cool.
It's very cool.
And yeah, I like games like that.
I should know the price. I don't have the price on that, but it's not expensive because I wouldn't have bought it.
Right. Like probably a couple dollars.
More than five.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, that's cool.
And then another one I want to talk about just came out last week. It's called Zen Bound. And what it is, this is going to be a little hard to describe. What it is, it's like wooden figures, and there's a nail, like nailed into the wooden figure, and there's a string attached to it. And what you try to do is wrap the wooden figure with this string to wrap as much of it as you can. When you actually touch the wooden figure with the string, it changes the color of that area.
Mm-hmm.
So at the top, it'll tell you what percentage you need to cover the wooden figure at, but
right.
You have to end the string on another nail.
Okay.
So once you get to that nail, the string breaks off and then it tells you your score. So what's great about that is, you know, you can keep trying to beat your personal best and then you move on to the next level after you've done that. And so far it hasn't been difficult.
Right.
But there's just the way you move, because you actually turn the wooden figure. That's how the string goes around.
Yeah, I think you're right that it is hard to explain because I can't even picture what it's like. I'm like, well, why don't you just wrap the string around the guy and be done with it?
Well, you actually move the wooden figure. So what's cool about it, sometimes the figure will be like a rabbit or like a dog, and like the leg of the dog, the string can get caught on it and go the way you want to go. So you've got to learn how to, you know, manipulate
right
the
object
the wooden
in 3D
figure.
Space.
Right
to make it fall where it needs to fall.
Exactly.
That sounds kind of cool.
It is cool.
It sounds different. At first when you were describing it, it almost sounded like Kicks, but now it sounds nothing like Kicks.
Right. Yeah. It's not.
Okay. We need a new Kicks. That's a good game. I finally started playing Left 4 Dead, And it's so cool. I mean, I'm sure most people that would have an interest in it already know what it is or have even played it. But, you know, it's a four-player game. And if you're not playing with other people, you could, you know, you play one of the characters and the computer can play the other three. Or you can play online and just get thrown into a game in progress, which is kind of neat. I mean, you can join a game in the middle of the game. If somebody, like, left, they'll just put you in that spot. And so,
but is there a lot of hazing from other people?
Well, I've only played it online once, so I don't know. But I didn't have any trouble. And I also don't have one of those, because I play it, you know, again on the PC, and I don't have one of those headsets,
right?
Which I should probably get at some point, because I was talking to a friend of mine, Kevin, who plays Left 4 Dead a lot, and he said you almost kind of need it in that game, you know, because people warn each other about things. But right. Basically, it's, you know, another zombie apocalypse game. You're in a city, and you're trying to get from, you know, location to location without getting killed by all these zombies. And the four of you have to stick together and you know, hold off the zombie horde while you make your way from one point to the next. And what's really neat about it is, you know, Valve keeps using, you know, a lot of game companies, when they develop an engine for a game, they develop it from scratch, and Valve just keeps improving that source engine that they use for all their games.
Right.
And it just, it looks so good. I mean, the way that the zombies run and the way that your player characters run and everything, the movements are really realistic, and they keep, you know, they improve their representation of people in every version of the engine and that sort of thing. I mean, the movements aren't, you know, you're not going to mistake it for a movie, but it's a lot closer to that than, you know, a lot of stuff that I've seen previous before this. But I mean, there will be times when there's like 100 zombies on the screen running at you, and the game never slows down. Right. It's so cool.
Does it ever get a little monotonous? I mean, isn't it the same thing?
It
over
is
and over?
Kind of, but you know, since the environments change, and I know that you know what I'm talking about from like Half-Life 2, they're really good at level design and making it seem interesting, even if you're going over a lot of the same kind of thing.
Right.
They're really good at that. And at the pacing, you know, I'm playing it on easy level. I'm sure if you're playing it on one of the harder levels, it's kind of nonstop and relentless. But it hasn't been too bad so far. And you know, I just want to play it and get used to it before I start playing it on the harder levels. Right. But it's a lot of fun. It's very visceral, and it is really creepy. I know you said you probably wouldn't play it because of that, and it is really creepy because, you know, there will be times when you can only have two weapons, your pistols, which you can have two of and have unlimited ammo, and then a second weapon of your choice based on whatever you find. So, you know, it might be a shotgun or an Uzi or something like that. So you're always trying to find, like, you know, ammo caches, and there are things like pipe bombs and Molotov cocktails every once in a while. You can only have one bomb at a time.
Right.
So you're always looking to find things to replenish your supplies. And so you might open the door to a closet, and, you know, there could be zombies in there. And there are special kinds of zombies, too. There's boomers, which are like big fat guys that explode, and their bile gets all over you, and the bile attracts the zombie horde. Uh-huh. And then witches who just like sit around crying, and if you get too close to them or shoot them, they get upset and they like try to kill you instantly. And hunters, which, you know, like jump at you really fast and try to pin you down and maul you. Smokers that have these like long tongues that they can shoot out at you to grab you and stuff. So it's kind of cool. And then the tank, which is like the big ginormous one that everybody has to gang up on or just run away from it.
Right.
But so it's pretty cool. It's kind of just mindless fun, which is nice.
But done well.
But done extremely well. It's really cool. So that's what I've been playing. And I think that's pretty much it for video games.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Good. We'll be back in a minute, and we're going to talk about TV. Okay, we're back, and we're going to talk about TV. Have you seen this week's Heroes yet?
No, you know what? I accidentally caught what I think is the pivotal moment of this last episode.
You just like tuned in at exactly the wrong
place. I'm a little
place.
Upset about it. Yeah, I just happened to turn the TV on, and you know, our DVR, when it's recording two things at the same time,
when
I turn the TV on, one of them is showing.
Yeah.
And of course, it was the pivotal moment.
Okay, well, don't say anything, because I haven't seen
it
yet either.
Please, I know how you are.
Okay, I'm just saying. Chuck, okay, if you remember last week, I was complaining that they were taking Chuck in a direction that was really going to bug me, because they introduced this spy character, you know, this British spy guy who's real suave and debonair and everything. And I don't think I can say suave without adding debonair onto the end of it. It's just like OCD thing with me. But anyway, so, you know, and it was going to be like the kind of thing where Sarah was going to fall for him. But actually, they ended up going in a completely different direction. It was really cool. What happened was the spy turns out to, first of all, be a really good guy. He's like real friendly to Chuck, and he's real helpful, and he's always complimenting on him. And every time Chuck gets upset that, you know, he thinks Sarah's going to like the guy even more, the spy reminds Chuck, he's like, hey, it was a team effort and you did great and all this kind of stuff. So you end up really liking the guy. Uh-huh. And, you know, of course, before he leaves at the end of the episode, he's still making a pass at Sarah and trying to woo her over and get her to go with him on a trip, you know, to so they can get together. And she declines his offer, and he says that he tells her that he knows that the reason she's turning him down is because she has feelings for Chuck, and she doesn't deny it. And then Chuck at the end of the episode tells her that he can't move in with her because they're supposed to move in together because she needs to protect him even more now, like 24/7, because Fulcrum, which are the bad guys, know that he's the Intersect now. And so he tells her he's not going to move in with her. And he says, you know, he's like, I'm crazy about you. And I can't, you know, it's one thing having to work with you and be around you, you know, all the time from day to day, but to spend 24/7 with you, he's just like, I can't do that. And he says, but you know, one day I'm going to get this thing out of my head. And when I do, I'm going to live the life I want with the woman who I love. I'm not going to let this thing rob me of that. And as he walks away, she just kind of smiles, which was really cool. Because it was neat that, you know, they didn't take that whole situation where we thought they were going to take it. And it was a good episode in general. It was pretty funny, and there were some good moments with Morgan and his girlfriend Anna and the other guys at the Buy More. So it was another fun Chuck. Do you want to talk about last week's Lost?
Sure.
So it was kind of the Gang's All Here episode where the people who
See, you have that written here.
who were stuck in the 70s from, you know, from the previous episode, like Sawyer and who else was there? Sawyer,
Juliet,
and I don't, you know what? I can never remember the names of the guys. Well, there's Dan.
The one who sees dead people.
Yeah, what's his name? I can never remember his name.
I don't know.
Isn't that terrible?
Yeah.
Maybe they never say it.
I'm sure they say it.
I don't know. But that guy. So they're all there. And then finally at the end of the episode, they meet up with Jack and Cade.
Which doesn't make sense to me. Okay, I understand. You know, I understand that you're going to be able to, like, try to convince me, but I'm not convinced.
No, I'm not trying to convince you. I'm just telling you how I understand it.
But I have an issue with they make it back to the island, and all of a sudden they're back to the island in 1974?
Yeah, sometime in the 70s when the Dharma was hot and heavy on the island. Or, I mean,
hot and heavy.
Not Dharma. I keep saying that. Wait, is it
yeah,
Dharma?
Yeah, the Dharma.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Yeah. Right. Oh, that's right. Okay. So, yeah.
So, obviously, that's where the island is at that moment. So, That's when they're good. I don't know.
What you said to me last weekend, was that you didn't understand. Okay, you understood how the people who were stuck on the island, who didn't leave and were jumping from time to time, how they ended up in the 70s.
I'll buy that.
That's fine.
Right.
But what you don't understand is how the people who went back to the island on the plane a couple weeks ago, how they ended up in the same time.
Right.
And what I said is because since the island apparently only exists
in that time,
that when the lady told them to board that plane because it would let them get back to the island, that's the time that the island is in, so that's where they ended up.
Okay.
I mean, that's the only way it can be explained.
Right.
That's the only way it can be explained.
And I buy that. I'm just saying I don't like it.
Right. But here's and I think you mentioned this last weekend, which is a valid point. Here's what doesn't make sense about that. Then how can anybody else exist on the island at a different time, which we've seen? Because some of the people before were jumping from time to time with the island, and some people stayed there.
Right.
Which means the island does exist at different times.
Right.
But you can't exist on the island in more than one time. Apparently. So I understand what you're saying. But maybe, no, I have no explanation for that.
Thank you.
That is a little bit weird. Okay, let's come back to American Idol. I just want to talk about Terminator last weekend.
I wondered what TSCC was.
Had Terminator Sarah Connor Chronicles. Okay. Had absolutely a fantastic episode. It was basically the end of the Riley story arc. The deal is that there's this girl, Jessie, who is from the future, and she is Derek, who's Kyle's brother. Uh-huh. Derek and Jesse were like a couple in the future. So Jesse came back, and again, I think I've mentioned this before, but she had originally told Derek, at which I'm sure he still believes, that she had come back into the past just to get away from that future because it was so miserable. So what they've kind of started revealing is that there seemed to be more than one future timeline. Like, that, you know, one of the things in the Terminator mythology is that, you know, the future is not set. The future is what we make of it.
Right.
Well, that they're starting to talk to get into that more, not really directly by talking about it, but little hints that his judgment day might have been different than hers. And so everything they do changes the timeline that they're on now a little bit, right. Which is kind of a neat thing. And
it's you know what? It's confusing. It hurts my head like Lost does.
Okay, well, I won't talk about that much. But Jesse came back just to get away from the future because it was so miserable, when really the real reason she came back she brought this girl to kind of romance John Connor so that he wouldn't be so attached to Cameron, his Terminator,
right.
In the future, because that was causing trouble. Well, we know a few things. Riley, the girl that she brought back to romance John Connor, has the hots for her, Jesse. And she doesn't like what she's doing. In fact, she tried to kill herself a couple episodes ago. And so what happened is she realized that Riley realizes that Jesse's ultimate goal wasn't to have her romance John Connor, but to have her romance John Connor and make Cameron jealous so that Cameron would kill her. So she realizes that that Jesse always intended for her to die. And so she confronts Jesse, and Jesse shoots her and kills her. And so now Cameron, you know, the Terminator, has been framed for this. And right. So now we don't know what's going to happen this week, but it was a really, really excellent episode. And then I want to talk about Dollhouse, because it was a good episode again this week, but they completely screwed their own mythology. In the show, after the active goes on an assignment or an engagement or whatever they call it, a mission, they bring him back to the Dollhouse, and there's this very carefully planned process where the handler is there, and the, you know, the active goes into this chair and they put their hands on these glowy paddle things and they recline and, you know, they're jolted with this electricity and something else is going on and they're sitting there in the chair going, ah, and, you know, their memory's wiped and everything. Well, in this episode, somebody hacked into Echo's cell phone and basically played back a recording of what sounded like an old modem or a fax machine and wiped her remotely. So it's right. Like, how can you have this whole mythology that revolves around this billions of dollars, extremely planned out process, and then say that, oh, by the way, you can also do that thing if you have like an old fax machine line? I mean, that was like ridiculous.
Right.
It was so ridiculous. I didn't like that. And it was a good episode except for that. So I kind of wish they hadn't ruined their entire mythology with
right.
that moment.
But they're still hookers, right?
Yeah, they're still okay.
That's, you know, as
still
long as
space hookers from the future, whatever you keep calling them.
As long as that doesn't change, I'm on board.
Yeah, that's fine. And then Battlestar Galactica actually was really tame last week, which I was.
Oh, so it's not going to be
it's
your.
It's not
going to
be my best entertainment moment.
Oh
no, so you.
So make, sure you listen.
Yes,
for the end of the show.
Remember to listen at the end of the show.
Wait, before we get into Idol,
yeah,
I have to talk about. Well, first of all, we have to talk about my new guilty pleasure, Celebrity Apprentice. Did you see it?
You know what? I saw a few minutes of it.
I liked it.
And I saw a few minutes of it when they did it the first time a couple years ago and just turned it off. It was like, this
right.
looks well, terrible.
Well, it all depends on what celebrities they have, but they have a good group of celebrities now.
Well,
who,
yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Who are crazy.
Well, the thing is, when we watched a few minutes of it last week, what was interesting was it seemed like it wasn't a bunch of bored celebrities doing this because they had nothing else going on.
Right. No, they're really fighting for their
charity. It seemed like they were really fighting. I mean, yeah. There was a lot of passion behind right. their arguments to not get fired.
Except for Dennis Rodman.
Well, he's not going to win any World's Most Articulate Guy Awards. So he's kind of got a disadvantage there.
Right.
But I was like really impressed with that. It looked like they were really trying really hard to not lose. Yeah, so like, what's going on? I mean, what are some of the cool things that have happened?
Well, you know, I've only seen the first episode. You know, it's hard because
has it only been on twice so far?
It's been on twice so far, but both episodes were 2 hours.
Oh.
So, you know, that's a big investment.
That's 2 hours you may not have.
I just love the battling personalities and how, you know, it doesn't matter that it's Joan Rivers. I'm going to, like, you know, I'm going to get in her face.
Yeah.
Even though I'm a poker player. You know what I'm talking about? Annie Duke, I think her name is.
No, I don't.
The poker
don't
player?
No, I don't.
Oh, my God.
That she's one of the people?
She's aggravating.
So who are some of the other people? I know there's Joan Rivers. There's
Playboy Bunny, Brooke Roderick or something like
Brandi
that.
Brandi Roderick.
Brandi Roderick. You would know that.
You know why I know her? I'll tell you why I know her.
Yeah, tell me why you know her.
She's.
Boobies.
No.
Boobies.
No. I remember reading something that she had written. I don't know when it was. It was like maybe 10 years ago or something. But basically, her whole thing was that everything she said dodged the issue of whether or not she had actually slept with Hef.
Uh-huh.
And she was the first person to make me think that the whole thing is a scam and that maybe Hugh Hefner may actually be gay. And that the whole thing
Come
is a
on.
Character that he put on. Because whatever it was
you
that
heard
she
it
said,
here first, folks.
Whatever it was that she said made me think that it was all just a big ruse. That these
now
girls,
I'll buy that maybe it's a ruse and that, you know,
now
the three girls
older,
living
mean?
With him, you know, they're not really his girlfriends.
Right.
And like, you know, it's just a ladder for them to, you know, become famous
right.
for whatever.
Yeah.
For whatever slight talent they have.
Yeah. Or for no talent, which
right.
seems
which,
to be
if you
something
saw one
this,
of them on Dancing with the Stars this week, you know no talent.
Well, and it also seems to be something this country has absolutely no problem with is people being famous for nothing.
Right.
I'd like to
Paris
point
Hilton.
Out Paris Hilton.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. but anyway, okay, so I was kind of joking about the gay thing, but I really got the impression that it was more of a, you know, these are the characters that these people play.
Right.
He plays the playboy and they play the playboy's girlfriends.
Right.
And she was the first person to really make me think that that might actually be true.
Right.
And that's the only reason I know her name.
Right. But I have to say, after watching that first episode, I really like her a lot. She's very smart. She's beautiful. She's very passionate, but like very grounded, I think.
Yeah. Scott, what's his name? Who else?
Scott Hamilton. The ridiculous Andrew Dice Clay.
Yeah.
He got fired, though, right? Huh?
Didn't he get fired?
No, he did not. Yes, he did.
On the first episode,
yes,
right? Yeah, that was the one that we saw. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
He's ridiculous. He really still thinks that he's like the greatest comedian of all time.
I know. And he's got like one shtick and that's it.
Yeah. And he's like still trying to like play that shtick and it's ridiculous.
All right. So who else? Dennis Rodman.
Herschel Walker. Melissa Rivers, who is just, you know.
Joan and Melissa are both on
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Are
but
they on
they're
the
really
team?
The same person. Oh, yeah. Oh. And they're the same person.
Is it guys versus girls right now?
Right now it is.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll be able to report more once I've seen the second episode. And by next week, I will have seen the third as well.
Yeah, I think we may have to start watching that.
But it was very entertaining.
When is it on?
Sundays, I want to say.
Oh, that's good because there's nothing on Sundays.
I'm not for sure. Just totally okay. pulled that.
You're getting your
out.
Entertainment news here, ladies and gentlemen.
Check your local listings.
Yes.
But
as always. And remember, we're in the central time zone here in Chicago.
Right.
okay, so... Well, that's cool. That's good to know because it did look pretty good from the few minutes that we saw of that first episode.
Right.
So now we may.
And what's
watching.
Great about it is the Donald, if I may call him the Donald.
You may.
He seems to always remind them that yes, they're celebrities, but on that show, he's the king. Because
well,
there's a couple times when Andrew Dice Clay kind of like stood up to him, and you could just sense the tension. And
didn't
and
he
Donald
actually
kinda,
say something?
Yeah,
I thought he actually said like put him in his place.
Right.
Yeah, that's kind of funny. Yeah, I mean, that's his whole thing. That's his whole thing is like promoting everything that he is and does to the nth degree, regardless of whether or not there's any substance behind
right.
it. Right. And it's pretty funny, actually. You yeah. know, he's an intimidating guy in person. He's really tall. He's like Donald.
Is he?
Yeah, he's like 6'2", 6'3".
Well, with the hair.
Well, not even with the hair. I mean, he's an imposing guy.
Right.
And that's all I have to say about that.
That's all I have this week, too. But
okay.
I'll have more in the future.
Okay, good. All right, so let's talk about American Idol. Last night was the first of the actual semifinal shows when the top 13 performed.
And I have to say that I'm working on very little sleep right now because I worked last night. I didn't get to see it last night. So I woke up early today to make sure I had seen all 2 hours before I came
So
here.
That we could talk about it.
Yeah.
I appreciate your loyalty and commitment to making the show a success. Now, if you could remember when the celebrity's on next week, that'd be a big help. So we talked about this real briefly, but both of us kind of felt like it was the first time we've ever seen a top 12, or in this case, a top 13.
Where there wasn't one person that completely sucked.
Yeah. Although, you know what? Anoop was pretty close.
Yeah, but
still, it wasn't cringeworthy. It wasn't
yeah.
It wasn't a moment where you were thinking, God, this person does not deserve to be here. It was just that he...
Anoop Dogg,
he screwed up.
Anoop Dogg is in the doghouse.
He is in the doghouse, and he should be going home.
Right.
You know what? Let's get this out of the way.
Let's address it.
Let's get this out of the way.
Hot off the presses.
Ryan teased us last night that there would be a rules change, and the first thought that everyone immediately had was that the judges are going to get to overrule America's vote,
and
apparently that's what it actually
yep.
is. And I was hoping that wasn't going to be the case. I was hoping that it was going to be that the judges would get to pick the songs for people to prevent them from making bad song choices. But
that would bother me even more.
Why?
Because,
Go ahead. Say
because it. I think that's, for example, David Cook last year, I think that was the big part of his success, was picking a song and
it, David Cookifying it.
Yeah. And like at first you're like, oh my God, he's doing Billie Jean.
Right.
And then he kind of like, you know, puts his twist on it and they're like, wow, that was amazing.
Right. Although, you know, that wasn't his twist, right?
No, I know. Right. It was Chris Cornell's.
Right. But so when you were watching it, knowing that it was Michael Jackson week, were you sitting there thinking to yourself, like I was, oh God, I hope nobody does Billie Jean because it's going to suck compared to what David Cook did last year. And I was glad that nobody did it. But yeah, so apparently the judges are...
What got me about it being Michael Jackson week, if I could go back a second, is didn't they just 2 weeks ago say, don't sing Michael Jackson?
They did.
All of a sudden, it's Michael Jackson week.
I know.
And, you know, the reason they didn't want people to sing Michael Jackson, because Michael Jackson puts his stamp on all of his songs. And, like, really, you're not going to beat Michael Jackson. And people are always going to go back to the Michael Jackson version.
Right.
So for them to then, you know, make them sing Michael Jackson songs, it was a little hypocritical.
Well, you know, and the thing is, too, it's not just that he puts his own stamp on it. He was such a unique style of performer. Kind of like the Bee Gees or Queen. Instead, it's like... If you hadn't heard their music and somebody described it to you, you'd be like, well, I would never listen to that. That sounds ridiculous.
Right.
A guy singing like a girl? Why would I want to listen to that? You know, but it's like for these artists, it just works. And that's why I think it's really... But they did a Queen week a few years back. And
it was a disaster.
I don't know if it was a disaster. There were some disasters, like Ace, which they wouldn't even let him do what he wanted to do. That was pretty funny.
Right.
But I didn't think last night was terrible.
I thought there were
a couple bad song choices that I wish people hadn't sung. Let's kind of go through it.
Okay.
Lil Round sang The Way You Make Me Feel, which I just thought was okay. They told her they thought it was great, a great way to start the show. I just thought it was all right.
Well, she really can sing anything, I think.
I know, but I didn't think that showed that off. I thought that was just
She went first.
Average performance. Yeah, and what's the deal with that? I always thought that was random.
I think they change it up.
Did they draw first again? No, probably not. It'd be interesting to see if they just rotate through them.
I would imagine. I bet those people who sang toward the end this week, next week probably sing toward the middle or the beginning.
Yeah. Then Scott McIntyre, a.k.a. Blindy. Because we're using the Michael Scott school of name remembrance. So he's Blindy. He's saying Keep Your Faith. Which I've never heard.
They had a little negativity with him, but when are they going to like get over the fact that he's blind and be honest with him?
Yeah, because
he's not that good.
He's not that good. He's a very average singer.
Yeah.
And I hope that they never again show another vignette of him and his sister dancing, because I don't ever want to see
it. I don't know
again.
That we discussed it last week. Did we discuss him singing that Mandolin Rain song? And here they get on people about song choice all the time, and they couldn't have picked... You know, he couldn't have picked a song more dated and lame.
I know.
Did we talk about that?
I mean, no, we didn't talk about that. But if you're going to pick a Bruce Hornsby song, that wouldn't be the one I pick.
Go with the big hit.
Yeah, exactly. Go with The Way It Is, because that was at least a fun song.
Right.
Mandolin Rain. And he explained why he chose that song.
Blah, blah, blah.
Exactly. He is not good enough to be in this competition.
No, he's not.
And he's not good enough to stay in this competition. Not cringeworthy, but just not that great.
Right.
He's just an average singer.
He's a poor man's George Michael. Didn't he sound a little like George Michael? Like an off-key George Michael?
No, he didn't to me. And you know, I can't... It's Chris Allen that always reminds me of Wham. Every time I watch the guy, I think I'm watching Wham. I like him, but it just feels like I'm watching Wham.
He's a much better singer, though.
He is. He's a really good singer, actually. And we're not to him yet, though.
I'm sorry. I've stepped out of turn.
Please stay in order. Okay, third up was Danny Gokey, who sang PYT.
Excellent.
It was
except the little thing at the beginning.
It was a little screechy. It was a little screechy from time to time.
Well, he
you didn't like the soft intro?
No.
Yeah. Too soft, too slow for you?
Too lame.
Then Michael Sarver was up for You Are Not Alone. Actually better than I thought it was gonna be.
I agree.
A little karaoke ish at times, but you know, he is, like they said, he is a good, passionate singer.
Yeah.
I just don't think he's gonna be strong enough to last too long in this competition. Next up was Jasmine Murray, who sang I'll Be There. And, you know, they kind of gave her a hard time.
Yeah, I thought she was better than...
I thought they was better than what they said.
And I thought she looked great. She probably looked better than anyone.
I loved her little 70s outfit. I thought that was really cute. you know, I don't know how I feel about this. I kept going back and forth while I was listening to it, thinking, wow, I really like this. And yeah, I think maybe those notes are a little big for her because she doesn't actually have a big voice. She has a good range, but she's not like a hugely powerful singer. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know ultimately how I feel about Jasmine, but she did look great, and I thought she did a fine job. Yeah. And then was Chris Allen, so you may talk about him now. He sang.
I already said all I have to say.
He sang what?
You did. I'm kidding.
He sang "Remember the Time."
I thought the guitar was completely unnecessary.
Well, the thing that was weird about it for me was that I couldn't really hear it.
Right.
I mean, and maybe I just don't know that song well enough to know what part he was playing, but I felt like I couldn't even hear him playing the guitar.
Right. But I thought it was good. I really thought that he did a version of it that would probably be saleable.
Yeah. It didn't sound like he was trying to do Michael Jackson, right, which was nice in more ways than one. Right. But yeah, you know, every time he sings, he has a couple moments of greatness, I think.
Right.
A lot of it is just good, solid performance.
His mouth does this weird thing, though.
He does. He moves his jaw around a lot.
Yeah, it's a little Mr. Ed for me.
Little Mr. Ed.
It is.
That's awesome. But yeah, he's a good
awesome
singer.
Awesome to make fun of people's features.
Well, it's a. I just meant it was witty. But no, that I think he's good. I think he's good, and I think he'll
right.
probably
but I
be
totally,
around for a while.
I totally agreed with Simon when Simon said maybe you shouldn't have brought the wife out so early. I thought that when they were showing the thing with his wife.
I agree. However, I don't think that he or his wife understood what Simon meant by that. I think he
right.
thought that Simon was insulting his wife when really what Simon was saying is
if you want
so
to be
many
a teen
girls
idol,
like you,
right.
maybe you shouldn't be talking
don't,
about your wife so
don't
much.
Don't die by the Donny Osmond curse.
Yeah, and then Ryan made it worse by saying I don't think you should be giving relationship
well,
advice.
Ryan's
that wasn't relationship
buffoon.
Advice. That was professional advice.
Ryan's a buffoon.
He is a dork. Okay, so the next was Allison Irohita, who is just fantastic.
Excellent.
I don't even think I knew that song before.
She's one of my picks right now.
She is just so good.
Yeah.
So good. And I can't wait to see what she does when she...
Like Big Band Week or something.
Yeah, I just would like to see her do something a little bit softer to see how that is. Because, you know, it's hard to not compare her to Kelly Clarkson in a lot of ways.
Right.
Because they both have that powerful, rangy voice. And Allison, in a vague way, resembles Kelly.
Right.
And Kelly's really good at all that stuff. She can do slow, she can do fast, she can do whatever.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see how Allison does in that sense. But she was just fantastic. And then there was a noob who sang Beat It.
Terrible.
Unquestionably
song choice.
The worst performance of the night.
It was almost like high school talent show.
It was just bad.
Yeah.
I mean, you know
Feel
the
bad.
Guy can sing well.
Feel bad for the kid.
I don't, because I have a feeling he's not going to get voted off. And that's probably why they made that rule change, because he should be.
It's the Sanjaya Anoop veto power.
Well, that's weird that they're both Indian. Don't you think?
Yeah.
I'm just glad Anoop doesn't have a faux hawk.
I'm waiting for your next on PC
no,
moment.
No, I'm just saying I'm just glad he doesn't have a faux hawk. So after Anoop's disaster was Jorge Nunez, who sang Never Can Say Goodbye. The judges didn't really like it. I thought it was good.
I didn't think it was bad either.
I thought it was nice.
He seemed nervous, though. And I thought he kind of like sang it a little faster than it needed to be.
It was definitely a lot slower than the originals, though. Wasn't it? Now, I don't remember the Jackson 5 version. Was it slower or fast?
It was slower than,
it was?
The disco version.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I like Gloria Gaynor's version of that song. And so I liked that this was a little bit slower than that.
Right. That's because you like bell bottoms.
I do like bell bottoms. Not on guys. I like them on girls. I think it's a cool look. It's one of my favorite things about I can't even remember. So never
I'm
mind.
Like, where is he going with
never
this?
Mind. What are the movies with Mila Jovovich, the video game-based movies?
Resident Evil.
I love how the costume people put her in bell bottoms in some of those movies.
Uh-huh.
It's a really cool look. It almost makes her look like a Japanimation character.
But in the same sense, not very effective when you're running from zombies.
I don't know. I didn't really look at what the zombies were wearing. If they had on big heavy shoes, it might not be a detriment. I'm
okay.
Just saying. All right. So then after Jorge Nunez, there was Megan Corkery, who I really like her. I love her quirkiness.
Yeah.
Because it's different.
She's losing me.
Is she?
Yeah.
Her
quirkiness was fun the first couple times. Now it's like, oh, she's going to do that silly little dance again. And I think she's beautiful. I'll say that.
Yeah. She's a very nice looking girl.
I was not moved.
Did you find it interesting when they were doing her package, as they call it, you know, showing her the package. Little vignette. And speaking of her package, she did look rectacular last night. When they were showing her little, you know, video vignette.
Wait, what did you just say?
I said she did look rectacular last night.
Oh, okay.
You just want to make sure I got that out there again for all those who missed it the first time. Didn't you find it funny to see her sort of When Harry Met Sally transformation through, like...
Oh, the hairstyles?
Yeah, the hairstyles and all that kind of stuff.
She was beautiful in every phase of
that. In every phase of that, yeah. You know, I feel for her, too, because I didn't realize that she had never really performed before being on this show.
Right.
And she does look nervous a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, she has a nervous look in her eyes. But whatever. I like the quirkiness. I think it's... And I know that's why they kept her on, is because they thought that the show needed that. And I agree. I like that she's different than everybody else. And then, of course, there was Adam Lambert, who did Black and White. You know who he reminds me of sometimes is Meatloaf.
What?
There were moments last night when he really reminded me. The sound of his voice was very Meatloaf-y.
You know, he really reminds me, and you probably aren't familiar with him at all, but he really reminds me of My Chemical Romance. Very much so.
No, I'm familiar with him because we did some work with him at the toy company.
Very much reminds me of them.
You know, here's the thing, and I've liked him since the first time we saw him in the auditions, but sometimes I get the impression that he's not singing so much as he is acting the part of a singer.
Right.
And that kind of bugs me, because then I don't know if this is really him.
Well, I think he's one of those, and I think there's a whole genre of this, especially like back in the 70s, like the whole glam rock thing, where it's not just about the singing, it's about the whole... It's almost like performance art.
Right, it is. It's like, and that's exactly how it comes across sometimes.
And I think he's really good at that.
Yeah,
and I think
I do.
That's why he got such, you know, such the praise he got last night.
Yeah.
Was just because he was the whole package then. I mean, yeah. He really did look, you know, he kind of reminded me of a little, I mean, in his voice and just the way he moved a little. I mean, didn't look anything like him, but he had kind of like an early Axl Rose thing to him.
Yeah, I could totally see that.
But he totally owned the stage on that.
He did. I mean, the guy is a fantastic.
And I have
performer.
To say, I wasn't going to mention this, but when he first came on, I was busy making myself something to eat, so I wasn't looking at him.
Yeah.
And I heard it, and when it was over, I just commented, I'm like, oh, well, that wasn't that good. Simon's going to tear him apart. And then they gave him all this praise, so I rewound and watched it.
Yeah.
And it really, like, it really was about the visuals and the whole
overall
performance.
And the guy is an incredible performer. I just, you know, the thing that I mentioned to you before is that for me, in some ways, he's a little bit like Taylor Hicks was, in that I really enjoyed his performances every week, but I could not see myself buying his music. Because, you know, I'm not into that whole glam rock thing, and I never was, even back in the 70s and 80s. So I would like to see him do something more versatile, I guess.
But that's not him. So if he did that, it seems like he's already completely pinpointed where he wants to be.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, not to take away from the guy. I think it's just like Chris Daughtry. I thought Chris Daughtry was talented. I just didn't like him because that's not my style of music that I like.
And now out of all of them, I think Clay Aiken's the only one that has sold more of a single album than he has.
Than Daughtry?
Yeah.
His first album sold more than Daughtry's,
Pardon me?
Did Clay outsell Kelly?
I think Clay to this day has the biggest selling album.
For a single album?
For a single album, yeah.
Wow, that's wild.
I think
wild.
Daughtry's right behind him.
Wow, that's wild. Okay, so then moving on.
Those facts could be completely wrong.
Yeah. Again, stay tuned.
You know,
I retain some of it.
I think
we should add a fifth segment, which is the apologies section of the show.
Well, usually we have the what Tony got wrong. I've been pretty good recently, though, so I'm sticking with it.
So there you go. So then after Adam Lambert was Matt Giraud with Human Nature, which
overrated.
I really liked.
Not me.
I really liked
it. Overrated.
No,
I didn't
like
think his voice was actually good at all in that.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I really like him. I really like him. I like his voice, and I like... he's kind of a strange guy because he's one of those dudes who seems like the white guy who wishes he was black. Yeah. But
well, see, that's my thing. I too much, and I even think he looks a little like him. And you're going to totally disagree with me, but I'm sticking by it. He reminds me a little too much like Justin Timberlake.
Oh no, totally.
And like he's trying to be like Justin Timberlake.
He looks
but
like if somebody took Justin Timberlake and stretched him out like they tried to do with Bobby Brady, then you'd get Matt Giraud. You remember when Sam the Butcher told Bobby Brady to hang from his bed so that he could get taller?
Oh my God, that's so wrong on so many levels.
Do you remember that?
Sam the Butcher told me to stand on my bed and get taller.
Hang from his bed. Moving on.
Yeah.
I like Matt Giroux, though. I think he's got a cool voice.
But doesn't have anywhere near the pipes of Justin Timberlake.
You know what? I honestly don't know Justin Timberlake well enough to be able to address that. Nor have we heard enough of Matt Giroux, I think, to be able to say that one way or the other. And then last, perhaps least, perhaps not, depending on your point of view, Alexis Grace singing Dirty Diana.
I liked it.
I thought it was a good performance. Yeah. One of the things that was a little weird about it was as soon as she finished the song, well, she had that weird, like, that last... She had did some weird little falsetto thing right at the end, like this three-note thing that I was like, ooh, what was that?
Yeah.
That was even weirder than Megan Corkery quacking at the end of her
performance. Well, you notice they were running low on time. In fact, I thought I was going to miss the performance because when I was watching it, I saw that there was only like 5 minutes left in the show and she hadn't even sung yet.
Yeah.
So I bet there was, and I mean, it was obvious by like the judges only like saying one word that, you know, they were rushing through the whole thing. So they probably gave her a lot of pressure. Like, you got to go out there and you got to do it fast. And like, so there was probably some pressure from the producers in that. So I'm going to give her a little slack on that.
Although I'm pretty sure that Fox would just push the news back a couple of minutes if Idol went overboard. But anyway, that aside, so she does this weird little thing right at the end of the song, and then all of a sudden she had this like super serious look on her face.
Yeah.
And also the whole time they kept showing her when the camera was moving around and you could see her from the side, she just kept reminding me of the speedster from Heroes. She had like that same haircut.
Oh yeah.
Which was kind of strange. But yeah, it was a good performance. I mean, I wasn't like, you know, crazy about it.
But I have to say it's the best show so far we've had all season.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is what most people consider to be the real part of the season.
Right.
So it's nice. And it was good that there was nothing that was cringeworthy. I was really happy about that.
I have to address a couple things.
Okay, please.
Why was Paula's face purple?
I don't know. And why was she on the verge of tears in half of the
And you know, I even said it out loud. She was very lucid at the beginning of the show, and by the end, like...
Maybe Simon's slipping or something.
Right.
Because he's always got his hands all over.
Right.
So maybe his hands are also in her Coke cup,
And don't you
too.
Think that Kara at some point is going to have a hunchback?
Oh, my God.
She's leaned over so much.
I think about that. Every time I see her, she's always like,
"Yeah,
you, the way you do that thing that you do, I mean, man, you got it. You got
it." But she's completely hunched over.
Yeah, she is.
You just did a visual, but I need to remind you this is an audio podcast.
I know, I'm just saying. But no, she does. She does hunch over a lot. She needs to be more careful with her posture. Yeah. Maybe we should send her some
back brace.
A back brace. Exactly. Or a broomstick and some duct tape. One of the two. So it was a good American Idol. And what?
What?
I don't know. Just tape it to her so she's standing straight up. It was a really good American Idol. And
two are going home, right?
Two are going home tonight.
A noop, for sure.
It should be.
Well, with this new rule, it probably will be.
I think it's going to be a noop and Michael Sarver.
I could see that.
I'm trying to think. I mean, nobody was other than Anoop was
Jasmine Maiko.
Really?
Yeah. I hate to say it because I really like her and I want to see her do well. But
why would you think that it would be her?
She just kind of. It was just like okay.
Yeah. But didn't you just say a minute ago that you really liked it?
Yeah. Oh, I did. Oh. No, I'm just telling you what I think America's going to vote.
Okay. You know, it could be Jorge.
No, I think first of all, they haven't really had a Latin singer on there who sings in a Latin style, and I bet there's a big Latin demographic that's
going to
stand
behind.
Could be Alexis. Could be. I hope not, though. I'd rather see Jasmine go than Alexis.
Yeah, me too.
I'd even, you know, over those, though, and you're going to disagree with me, I'd even almost rather see Megan Corkery go.
I could see her going. I hope that she doesn't, but I could see her going. Yeah. Do you ever vote?
I'm usually not home when it airs.
Oh, okay.
But no, I have voted.
Yeah.
I voted at Dancing with the Stars, but we'll talk about that later.
Oh, dear. Must we?
Please stay tuned.
Oh, no. All right, well, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back to talk about movies and pretty much talking exclusively about Watchmen this week. Yes. So we'll be back in a minute. Okay, we're back, and we're going to talk about movies, and as we mentioned last week, we got together over the weekend and both went to see Watchmen together.
Yes.
And again, we thought it'd be cool because Tony has read the graphic novel and I have not, because it's a book and requires reading.
But it has pictures, so I think you'll be okay with
it. Oh, pictures. So, all right. Overall impressions, what'd you think?
I liked it.
Yeah.
I really was worried about how it was going to like transfer to the screen because, you know, reading the book, I didn't see how they could do it and get the message across, and I think they did. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that was not in the movie that was in the book. I mean, there's a whole other side story or subplot that's nowhere, you know, in the movie
at all.
What
is it? What did it involve?
It throughout the book, interspersed, there's a kid reading a comic book about a pirate story and about a guy seeking revenge after his family's been killed, and it's pretty gruesome. In fact, it would have been hard to put it in the movie.
Right.
I think they did it more for time constraints rather than, you know.
Yeah, because the movie was already almost 3 hours long.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I've read some stuff that it on the DVD, it's going to be included in like a motion comic thing.
Now, isn't that motion comic already available online?
Yes, okay. Of the whole book.
Right.
But it's just going to be the pirate story DVD.
Okay.
That way you can, you know, see the part that was left out. But another thing that they left a lot out of the movie was a lot of exposition on some of the older heroes, like the Minutemen.
Oh, okay.
You know, like Sally Jupiter, the original Silk Spectre, and the original Night Owl. There's a lot of stuff in the book on them that didn't make it to the screen.
Right.
And I can't say that it was necessary for the story, but it's certainly, you know, after reading the book, it really helps flesh out, you know, the story and the characters.
Right.
So, I mean, I missed it, but it wasn't, you know.
There was a couple lines of dialogue in the movie that kind of explained it. Basically, it was like the criminals started dressing up so that it was hard to identify them. And so then they figured, well, why don't we dress up too, you know, just to make it fun.
Well, they did something really clever, and you even pointed this out without having read the book, is in the opening credits, they showed little things that happened. And that's explained in the book, you know, through the reading process rather than it just being little snippets, you know, little scenes of what happened. It's actually, you know, part of the story in the book.
Yeah.
So the way they handled that, I mean, they explained some of it through the opening credits. I thought it was genius.
Yeah.
And let me just say right off that the visuals of this movie were amazing.
Yeah, they were very good. It was a very nice looking movie. It was a very interesting movie to watch.
And very religious to the book. In fact, you know, I'm anxious for you to at least thumb through the book and see that.
No, I'll read it.
Some of it, like, he really was religious to the book in even, like, some of the camera shots and the
framing
angles
and all that.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Well, I agree that I liked it. I enjoyed it. I was entertained by it. I didn't love it. I don't think it was a masterpiece or anything like that. But, you know, I think it had moments of greatness, and I think that there were some things that I guess I wish were different. You know, one thing that a friend of mine said was that he thought it was very cold, distant, and soulless. And I'll agree with cold and distant to a certain degree, because I think part of what the story was about was the sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? The Watchmen had this little community that just consisted of themselves.
Right.
And I think outside of that little community, they felt very detached from the rest of the world.
Certainly.
And
they were,
that's
like outcasts.
Right. And I think that's a big part of, even though most of their identities were a secret, again, ridiculous, especially for, Silk Spectre 2, who didn't even wear a mask.
Right.
How could you not recognize her?
Right.
Oh God, I didn't recognize you in that shirt. I mean, what's that? But anyway,
right.
So aside from the fact that most of them had a secret identity, you know, they I think they felt very detached from, and in fact, of course, that's Rorschach's whole thing,
is
his, you know, detachment from society and what it's become. And
right.
That sort
we
of thing.
Also have to point out that this book was written in the mid-80s.
Right. It was written.
And it was at a time when, you know, the world, especially America, was like kind of, greed was like, you know,
greed was out of control, and the whole threat of nuclear war between
right.
the United States and Russia. And you and I talked about this right after we saw the movie. I was amazed at how relevant a lot of that fear
completely.
Was to what's going on right now with terrorism and all that kind of thing.
Right. I agree. There was so much, especially when, without giving too much of the movie away, there was some talk about creating a non-fossil fuel
Right.
And then that how that would be a threat because, you know, the whole economy is based on oil. And I'm like, oh my God, that couldn't be more true today.
And that was a really funny scene at Veidt's office when he's talking to Lee Iacocca and some other people,
right.
You know, the Japanese car company people and all that. And they, you know, exchange a few words. And I thought that was really funny. Now, one thing that I didn't get from the movie, and we talked about this a little bit, but maybe you can talk about it more, is I was never really sure, other than with Dr. Manhattan, did these people have some kind of superpowers or were they just ordinary people? And you said they were just ordinary people. But what I don't get about that is how does an ordinary person dodge a bullet? Like Ozymandias is just because he's so smart that he can predict how people are going to react and is able to move quickly.
Right.
And get
yeah.
Out of the way.
You know what? There's not, even in the book, there's not a lot of backstory as to how they, you know,
do what they do.
Right. And how they got so strong or so.
Yeah.
You know,
because
they don't, like you said, they don't have supernatural powers, but they're powerful. I mean, they're.
Well, and somebody even said that there were a couple conflicting lines of dialogue about that. Somebody said, you know, well, when Hollis and Dan. Okay, we're having their weekly beer session, and Hollis, you know, made some reference to, you know, well, we thought it'd be fun to put on costumes too, you know, da da da. That made it seem like they're normal people.
Right.
But then later, somebody else had a line about how Sally was always his favorite. I don't know, maybe it was the comedian was always his favorite mutant.
Right.
And I'm like, well, what does that mean?
Right.
And then there's the thing about Ozymandias being able to dodge a bullet, and then even though. Silk Spectre 2 and Dan had their little conversation, which I thought was kind of funny that she asked him, well, how were you able to afford all this stuff? And I thought that was kind of funny that
right.
they actually addressed that. So that was, again, more towards the real people, you know, regular people kind of thing. But then how did Rorschach's mask work?
Right.
What was that all about?
Well, I think one thing in the book, and the movie was pretty good at doing this too, is it kind of created a different version of our world. Like, I mean, for example, in the movie and in the book, you know, Nixon, you know, served 5 terms.
Right.
I mean, they just continued to reelect Nixon through everything. I mean, they mentioned Woodward and Bernstein and, like, you know.
Right.
And so already it's a twisted version of reality.
Right.
So that you kind of will, you know, give in to the, you know,
yeah.
some of the stuff that's not realistic.
Yeah. Well, and I understand that, but I just wish there had been some specific, or maybe that was part of it, that it didn't really matter if they were
right.
regular people or superheroes,
right?
You know, had supernatural abilities. Maybe it just didn't matter because it wasn't really about that.
Right.
It was about the world that they lived in, how they saw it, and what they did about it. And, you know, if you haven't seen this movie, and if you love superhero movies, and your kids love superhero movies, let's just tell you flat out, your kids should not be going anywhere near this film. There were people with little babies in the movie theater.
Babies cooing or crying in the theater, and it was so aggravating. I mean, this
is not a kid's movie.
Oh,
it's
my
not
God.
A kid's story.
There were some
pretty
intense,
there's
gory scenes.
Very gory stuff. And that aside, there's rape. There's just flat out murder. And I'm not talking about bad guys. I'm talking about the superheroes.
Right.
There's a scene where the comedian, it's like a flashback to Vietnam. And the comedian and Dr. Manhattan are serving it, you know, for America in Vietnam. And they're in this little bar or something. And this pregnant Vietnamese woman comes in and tells the comedian, you know, it's time we have to talk about you, talk about us and our baby. And he doesn't want to deal with her anymore. So he pulls out his gun and shoots her dead.
Right.
I mean, this is not a kid's movie.
Yeah.
And so please do not take your children to see this. They don't need this stuff burned into their heads from whatever tender age they're at. But
I also don't need a baby cooing and crying right behind me.
ruining a rape scene. but yeah, I mean, it's just, I don't like it when people take babies to R-rated movies. Right. I don't get it. But anyway, let's talk about the opening credits, because there was a lot of cool stuff in the opening credits. There's some stuff that I noticed. I mean, there was the Last Supper shot. Did you see that?
Yeah.
That was kind of funny. But then did you, and I didn't notice this while we were watching it, but I read something about it afterwards. There was a scene with the original Night Owl punching out a guy. And if you look at that scene, back in one corner, they're like in an alley, and back in one corner, there's a mother, a father, and a little boy next to the door of this building. And basically the implication was that Night Owl is the one who punched out the guy who was going to kill Bruce Wayne's parents.
Oh.
And that he basically prevented Bruce Wayne from ever becoming Batman in that reality, which I thought was really funny.
That is cool.
Yeah, if that's that what the implication cool. was. I mean, it certainly seems that way from what they showed.
There's a lot of things in there, and I read an interview with the director. Like, he purposely put, like, Easter eggs all over this movie.
Yeah, yeah. So it'd be cool to go back and watch it and definitely. Try to spot some of that stuff.
Definitely.
Rorschach's story in the film was so
gut-wrenching.
Gut-wrenching, yeah. And sad and depraved. You know, and it's interesting because Rorschach's a really interesting character because his whole thing is no compromise, no compromise, no compromise, no compromise on anything. He's all about, you know, punishing people for their crimes, but yet everything that he does is reprehensible.
Right.
And.
But it's because of his own upbringing that, you know,
his
whole outlook is so screwed up
right.
that, you know, he sees nothing wrong with anything that he's doing.
But everything wrong with pretty much everything else.
Right.
And in fact, I was really scared in the scene where he was in Dan's secret lair.
Uh-huh.
There was a moment, like, when he put out his hand for Dan to shake his hand. I thought he was going to, like, beat the crap out of him or kill him or something.
Right.
Because, like, you never knew what Rorschach was going to do.
Right.
And that was really cool. We have to talk about the music, though, which I pretty much hated. I hated...
It doesn't stay with me. I don't remember it.
They chose a lot of really cliched songs.
That's right. Oh,
I was
my
very
God.
Upset with the musical choices made
every,
in this movie.
Every...
And, you know, a lot of that came from Zack Snyder because I read interviews with him where he's like, oh, I knew I wanted it to be this song. It's like, you know
I
what?
I thought you were referring to the score. Yeah, he chose songs that have been overused so much. I mean, every single song he used that was from, like, you know, a certain time has been used time and time again.
And you know what is just absolutely ridiculous is watching two people having sex while listening to the song Hallelujah. Yeah. I mean, give me a break. That is just seriously one of the dumbest things I've seen in a movie in so long. I hated almost all of the song choices. I'm not
going to
say anything
completely.
About the musical score, but the song choices I thought were almost always a complete disaster.
Well, I mean, just because they were so cliche.
Yeah.
The Jimi Hendrix All Along the Watchtower and Simon and Garfunkel.
Yeah.
Ugh. Just it's been done.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree. That was one of the biggest letdowns for me.
Yeah. I didn't like that stuff at all. But I mean I think it's, you know, I would not say that it's an important movie, but I think it's still a very relevant story. And you know, the end is a little funky because, you know, to me this was all
no spoilers.
We don't wanna no?
No.
Okay. The movie to me was all about you know, the world that we've created
right.
through our greed and our amorality and that sort of thing and how people deal with that. And then the end was almost more of a typical comic book ending.
Right.
In a way. And so the end kind of almost didn't fit with the rest of the movie to me in that sense. I mean, I didn't hate it, but and there is something at the very end of the film which, you know, basically says that the world's going to get much worse than it already is. Even though it seems like there's going to be a sort of happy ending in one way, then it kind of turns around right at the
right.
very end. Not by anything that happens, but by something that's implied.
Right.
And that's that was kind of almost a punchline ending to me. And I actually thought it was kind of funny. But it's definitely a movie that if you think you would enjoy that type of a story, you should definitely see it while it's in the theater.
I think it can be appreciated on a lot of levels. First of all, I want to say, you know, it's a book that's really hard. Like, when you're reading the book, you can't see how they're going to transfer it to the screen. And I read an interview with Zack Snyder that he said that originally he didn't want to do it because he thought that there's no way you could bring that to the screen. And the reason he did it was because he was afraid after turning it down,
if
anyone else did it,
yeah.
that they would make it so much worse.
Yeah.
So, you know. I yeah. think it's a little self-serving answer.
Yeah, it is.
But I really think that it's not anything that does harm to the original source material.
Right, right. I could see that. Now, did you notice the, you know, the cover of the book is the eye of this little smiley face pin with blood dripping off of it.
Right. And
it
has that smiley face appears all throughout the movie.
Right. But it also appears, elements of it appear in other places. The Doomsday Clock. You know what I'm talking
right.
about?
Oh, the clock. And on Mars, there's you know, there's craters that make the form of
right.
the face. Yeah.
But the Doomsday Clock, I wasn't quite sure what the connection was there. It was interesting because it was like a half of a clock. There was nothing on the right side, and the left side had, you know, marks for the different hours, but the marks were the eyes
right.
from the smiley face.
Right.
And I was trying to figure out why that was done. Now, do they show that in the book, too, and is it the same way?
It's been a little while. I don't really remember.
Okay.
Probably.
But you just made that up.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, we're going to leave it at that. And then the only other thing that I want to mention in movies is I read a few little tidbits about, you know, James Cameron has been working on this movie Avatar for supposedly like 10 years.
Right.
And it is not another documentary about the Titanic, thank God. And really, there have been not that many details about it, but some people, I guess, saw a few minutes of footage from the film, and I don't know why these people were allowed to see it. But basically, there are a lot of crazy, intense alien worlds and people controlling aliens. Like, I mean, as the name would imply, it's you controlling somebody that represents you rather than actually you yourself.
Right.
And in that sense, it makes me a little nervous because it seems like there might be some elements of Flight of the Navigator in it, which, you know, not the best movie in the world. But somebody made a comment that they said it was like Aliens, but from the point of view of the aliens. Which, I don't know how that relates to the actual story, but that's kind of a cool...
Or even to the title.
Right, exactly. But I don't know. I mean, I'm really looking forward to finding out more about it because, you know, the guy does make great movies.
Yeah.
Even though I didn't like Titanic, it was still a well-produced film. I just didn't like the story. I mean, come on. Aliens, Terminator, even The Abyss had moments of greatness with a terrible ending.
Right.
So it'll be cool to see what he does with that. And that's pretty much all I've got for movies. You got anything else you want to talk about?
Oh.
All right, cool. We'll be back in a minute to do our mishmash section, mashup.
The mishmash.
Our favorite and least favorite entertainment moments of the week. We'll be back in a minute. All right, we are back, and this is the mashup section, or...
The mushmush.
The mushmush, as Tony calls it. Okay, this week's iTunes iPhone rant of the week, I have nothing.
Really?
I have absolutely nothing new since last week to complain about.
I don't have anything either.
You want to make something up? The iPhone smells really bad.
I have nothing.
Yeah, I don't either.
No, I do want to point out they finally released a turn-by-turn navigation application for the 3G iPhone.
Yeah.
It's called X-Roads. And,
you don't think it's...
I don't know. I haven't done my research on it yet. I'll report more on it.
No, I was just gonna say you don't think it's supposed to be pronounced Crossroads.
Sure, but I mean if you're,
oh
yeah, but I mean
it's X R O A D S.
Right.
Right. Okay. I gotcha.
I'm sure it's pronounced Cross. Whatever.
Whatever. Well, I think the developers probably would.
But just because it's so much, it's a big download. I think it's like 900 megs or something.
That is fairly huge. Well, because it's got all the map data.
Right.
Right.
And so they split it up. From the United States, it's, you know, $19.99 for the west half and $19.99 for the east half.
And if you live in Illinois,
it's yeah,
split in the middle of the state.
It's split in the middle of Illinois. So both of us being from Illinois, kind of a downer. But I would imagine that the Chicagoland area is all in one.
I would think so. I thought that you said you thought you read it was split east-west. I thought it was split north-south.
That would make more sense, and I hope that's the way. But just because I knew that both applications were split east-west, I thought that they would just put a line right down the middle of the country.
Yeah.
But I'd like to know that maybe they were a little smarter and, you know.
Well, I don't know why you would split a state at all. Just pick one half of the country.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's not like we're the only state in this part of the country.
And it's not like that if they did do it north-south, like there's so much in southern Illinois that they had to put it on the other application, keep it all together.
You know what? Indiana can have it.
Right.
We don't even care about the south half of this state, even though that's where our capital is. Well, especially maybe because that's where our capital is, if you know anything about our state government.
Right.
But yeah, I did you download it?
I have not yet.
Well,
because
it's like
the $19.99
right?
is hard to justify. So I've read some reviews. I read the reviews on iTunes, and there's a lot of bad reviews.
Really?
Yeah. But there are some people saying, well, you know, for the first turn-by-turn, it's not bad, and it does what I need it to do. But to be honest, for $20, and I'm willing to pay more, but for $20, I want it to do more than just be
Well, it should
okay.
at least work.
Right.
I
well,
mean, that's the whole thing.
According to a lot of the reviews, it does.
Oh,
but
okay.
some people are complaining that, oh, you know, the 3D views, they're better, you know, with the Google view, you know, in the normal map section of the iPhone. And I mean, yeah, I haven't been able to decipher whether the bad reviews are, you know, just people expecting way
really
too much.
Really nitpicking.
Or,
Yeah, I mean, if you buy a GPS, it's going to cost you at least $150 for, you know, anything even remotely usable. So $20 doesn't really seem that bad. But whatever. Yeah, I mean, the GPS in my car is so old. It doesn't even have a 3D view. And I think the map data that that's in mine right now, because it hasn't been upgraded, it was already like 3 years old before my car was released. And then they came out with another version right after that. And that was like 2 years ago. So my map data is probably 5 years old at least. But like it's so bad that I would almost be willing to have another GPS in my car just to have some of those cool features.
Right.
But that's cool that it finally came out. And I'm almost surprised that the App Store approved it. Because wasn't there a lot of talk about how they weren't going to do that originally?
I don't know.
Remember when it first came out last year, everyone was saying that they thought Turn by Turn was coming like imminently, and they thought TomTom was going to come out with an app right away.
Yeah, Garmin had talks of it too.
And then they said that, oh, that's probably not going to happen because Apple has an agreement with, or maybe it was that AT&T had some kind of agreement with somebody that they didn't want to piss off or something like that. But whatever. It's here. It's $20. Go buy it and shut up. So then I don't know if you saw this, but Thermaltake showed at the CeBIT show this last week a new computer case called the Level 10 that was designed by BMW. Uh-huh. Did you see that?
No.
It's really cool. Check it out on pause.com.
Check it out as we speak.
Just look up Level 10. It's really cool because what they did was, rather than coming up with a cool case and sticking everything inside of it, they made this computer case that's basically a bunch of discrete areas. So like the motherboard and CPU and cooling for that are in one little chunk. And then this stuff is in another little chunk. And your expansion cards are in another chunk. And all the drives are kind of in their own little containers that stack up on what looks like kind of a little ladder. It's really a cool case concept. And
it's really weird looking.
It's very weird looking. It looks like something out of like a sci-fi movie, like you'd see on a spaceship. And it's really cool. And I called Thermaltake and they said they're actually going to release it in June, and it's probably going to be about $400. And I'm assuming that $400 includes a really good power supply too, because based on the weirdness of the case design, I don't think you could just probably go out and buy any old power supply and have it work well. So so keep an eye out for that and check it out online.
Sorry it took me so long to find it. I was sifting through all the car stuff.
You and your anti-car stance. Not that much car stuff, is there? There are like two articles since then. But anyway, of course, you know, rumors have been going on for a couple of years that Apple's going to release a netbook or they're going to release a tablet PC. And it seems like those rumors are actually coming true now. There's been a lot of news over the last few days from people who claim to be from some of the suppliers that Apple uses to make their products. And even Reuters today released an article that said that the screen, which is going to be, you know, probably right around 10 inches, is coming from a company called WinTech, and that the computer itself is going to be built by Quanta, which I think is the same company that builds the iPhone. So that would make sense.
Okay.
So you never know. Maybe this fall, Apple will come out with a 10-inch tablet PC, and all the Apple fanboys will melt. This is what they love to do. And Apple also released a new iPod Shuffle that talks to you, which I cannot think of a more annoying thing.
Right.
An Apple product speaking to me.
Telling you cannot pick what the next song is.
Exactly. Yeah. I call myself genius, but really I am stupid. Probably it senses your brainwaves. And if you're listening to it while you fall asleep, it says, Apple is God, worship and obey. I wouldn't be surprised by that either. And then I also wanted to talk about something. I read this article on the AP about the demise of Circuit City, because, you know, the final Circuit City stores closed on Sunday. And they even had the founder's son, I think, talking about, you know, a lot of the mistakes that Circuit City made along the way. He talked about not getting into the movie and music business sooner. He talked about not taking Best Buy more seriously. And he talked about discontinuing sales of appliances, which I don't think I even noticed that they did. But I guess now that you think about it, there was not an appliance section anymore in Circuit City. But what he didn't mention, which I couldn't believe, was the whole DivX fiasco. And again, just to refresh people's memories, when DVDs first came out, Circuit City tried to basically sabotage the entire DVD thing by coming out with a competing format called DivX. And it's not the same as the DivX codec that's out now that people use. I mean, the two are vaguely related, but not really. DivX was, you would buy a special DivX machine that you had to hook up to your phone line. So it was like a DVD player, but you had to hook it up to your phone line. And it was $50 to $100 more than a regular DVD player. And then you would buy these special DivX movies that were not widescreen and had no extra features. You would only pay like $5 for the movie compared to, you know, $30 for a new DVD at the time. But you could only watch it for 2 days. And then if you wanted to watch it again after that, you had to pay a rental fee.
Right.
And they spent hundreds of millions of dollars not only developing this format, but, you know, payoffs to the studios to try to get them to back it because they wanted it to win out over DVD, which was ridiculous. Why would you pay more money for a machine that would then require you to pay more money every time you wanted to watch a movie? And the movies wouldn't play on regular DVD players, so you couldn't take a movie over to a friend's house and watch it.
Right.
And you could upgrade the movie to what was called silver status, which was basically you'd pay full price for the movie anyway, so you'd pay like $30. And then
just have a DVD player and buy the DVD at that
exactly.
point?
Exactly. It was a giant, huge disaster. And it was so greedy that right then and there were hundreds of thousands of people who vowed never to shop at Circuit City again. And I really think that the whole DivX fiasco was the thing that did them in, and it's just that it started 10 years ago and it finally caught up with them now. I mean, even I think it was in 1998 or 1999 that they posted $114 million loss that they attributed directly to DivX. And that was just the loss. That doesn't even account for all the money that they actually had to spend while they were developing it. But, you know, I feel no sympathy for Circuit City at all. I feel bad for their employees who are out of a job now. Well, I feel bad for one employee of theirs who I actually know. And other than that, I actually don't care. Because you can't run a business that way. You can't be that greedy and not expect for it to bite you in the ass at some point.
Right.
So that's pretty much it. And
I have a little bit of news I just saw while you were going on. Not that I wasn't listening. It was very it was very informative.
That's great.
But
thanks, Tony.
I have just read that Battlestar Galactica and other NBC shows are now available on the PlayStation Network. So you can download individual episodes of Battlestar Galactica.
That's excellent news.
It is.
Despite the fact that Battlestar Galactica is not an NBC show.
Yeah.
It's a sci-fi show.
Why does it say?
NBC owns sci-fi, which is probably why it says that. Well, that's pretty cool.
In addition, The Office, 30 Rock, Heroes, 40-year-old Virgin, my favorite NBC show.
Yeah, that's a great one. I don't get
but
that.
But that's just stuff that's up on PSN now, so.
Cool. You know, I'm a little nonplussed by all the various download services. I tried the Netflix one through the Xbox 360. The video quality was terrible.
Did you try downloading something in HD?
Well, I don't remember it giving me that option. I remember it. No, it was a streaming thing, not a download thing.
Oh, okay.
So it you know, it tested the connection and then it said, okay, we've adjusted the video quality for your connection. And then it was like worse than watching a 10th copy of a VHS tape.
Ugh.
It was really bad. And it was not even widescreen.
Right.
So I was like, well, who would pay for this?
No, but I've downloaded stuff off of, not through Netflix, but just individual episodes of stuff from the Xbox Live.
Yeah.
And now this isn't streaming. This is download.
Right.
And it's great.
Well, yeah, because it's download. But the streaming, right, I don't think is working well, even over a really high-speed cable.
Why do you have
connection
to watch it right away?
Well, then last night, I'll get into this later. So you know what? I'm not even going to talk about that. So let's get right into our best and worst entertainment moments of the week.
Okay.
Worst, you go first.
My worst entertainment moment of the week, it's small, it's tiny, it was like a couple minutes, but it was cringeworthy, to say the least. Okay, I was doing some stuff on the computer yesterday, and The View just happened to be on.
Oh, here we go.
Yeah.
I tripped over the remote and turned on the Playboy channel by mistake.
The View just happened to be on, and all this week, The View is broadcasting from the Disney Studios in Burbank. And
is there some special reason for that?
So they can
go to Disney for
sell
free
more Disney movies or something. Yeah. They've been, you know, hawking Disney for the whole week. It's been annoying. Not that I watched the whole week.
Right.
Let me put that out there.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, so one of their guests was Jimmy Kimmel.
Right.
And he came out dressed as Rosie O'Donnell.
And it was bad?
Well, you know, the whole Rosie thing and The View and just how Rosie left under bad terms. And, like, there was just this uncomfortability.
Yeah.
And he just kept pressing it, which, you know, I give him points for his moxie, but it was so uncomfortable. And it wasn't funny.
Oh, it wasn't.
It just was very, like...
How did they react to it?
Not well. Barbara had a scowl on her face like you've never seen.
That's funny.
And,
see, I don't watch
that
show.
And for that,
it was worth it.
I give him some points. Yeah. Because, you know, to rattle her cage is, you know.
She doesn't seem to be that difficult to rattle, though. You would think she would because she's Barbara Walters, but she seems to get rattled fairly frequently. Doesn't she?
Yeah, but she's got, you know, from what I understand, she's got a lot of power. A lot of power.
Yeah.
And so, you know, so many people are afraid of her. So to see someone go up against her, you know.
Do you think she's a member of the Watchmen and we just don't know it? What would her character be?
I don't know, but I don't want to see her in spandex, that's for sure.
My worst entertainment moment of the week was a complete disaster. Monday night, we have a little baby, so we can't really watch most TV until after he goes to sleep.
Right.
The only thing that really will let him be in the room for when we're watching is like American Idol that has nothing, you know, nothing that's going to bother a little baby. And even then, like I've said before, Amy doesn't like it.
And even when Anoop came on, you ran him out of the room.
Yeah, it's like, foreigners. No. I'm kidding.
Send those letters now.
It's a joke. No, and even then, Amy doesn't like it. She'll cover his eyes or turn him around when we fast forward through the commercials because she doesn't want that stream of of visual information to like freak out his tiny little brain. So whatever. So, you know, so we time shift most of what we watch.
Right.
Because we have to. And so we go to start watching Chuck on Monday night.
Your baby in the park is the one in the bubble, isn't it? I've seen that commercial, well, the baby in the bubble.
I can't figure out, what's it? Is that lady have an accent or is she retarded? She's like, which one's yours? The one in the bubble. It's like, where is she from? It's weird. I hate that commercial. And they play it all the time. So anyway, so we go to start watching Chuck on Monday night. And Amy goes and, you know, because we have DirecTV and it's the one with DirecTV's homebrew DVR, which sucks. Can't wait till TiVo's back. And so she goes to play the episode, and she hits play, and immediately the message pops up that says, are you sure you'd like to delete this recording? She's like, oh, did I hit the wrong button? So she says no and goes back and hits play again, and the same message comes up. And so we realize we can't play anything on our DVR. We go to everything, even stuff that's old that hasn't been – and, you know, keep in mind, we've got five or six shows that we'd like to watch on.
Your Monday Night Dilemma.
Monday Night Dilemma. So we go back and we can't watch anything. So we say, okay, let's just watch. And it happened to be right around 9 o'clock. So he said, let's just watch whatever's coming on now. I think it was Medium. And then we'll go back and you know, let's watch whatever's live now, and we'll go back and watch stuff after. So we watch Medium, and that was fine. And then I couldn't get the stuff to work even after that. You couldn't even pause Medium. So we had to like watch commercials and everything, which was crazy. Right. And so afterwards, I'm just like, you know, I'm just going to unplug the receiver because there have been a few issues with it before, and you just basically unplug it and then you plug it back in and it reboots itself and everything's fine and dandy. Well, we did that. And again, it takes like 15 minutes for the receiver to reboot because it has to get all new information from the satellite for some reason. I don't understand why. But whatever. So we turn it back on. We reboot it. We go into our save programs list. Nothing from Monday night is there. Everything was gone.
So
our Monday Night Dilemma?
Chuck?
There was no dilemma because there was no Monday night TV for us. It was terrible.
They did you a favor, though.
No, they didn't do me a favor. They ruined my entire week. That was
my
worst
entertainment
moment of the
week. Maybe they feel that you should take up books. Maybe it heard last week's podcast.
I'm fairly certain that neither NBC or DirecTV wants me to start reading more. Okay?
So how did you watch Chuck?
I watched it online, and that's what I was going to complain about because you go onto NBC.com, which, first of all, doesn't work with Internet Explorer because NBC thinks if you're using Internet Explorer, NBC thinks that you're on a mobile computer and tries to show you their mobile version of their website, which you can't watch video on. So I had to go in through Firefox, and it says that you can watch it in HD, and it didn't look even close to HD. Again, it looked like a bad VHS recording, and it's kind of choppy, too.
Is that the same with Hulu? Does Hulu do that as well?
Hulu was worse.
Really?
Yeah, I tried to watch it on Hulu first, and then I left that and went to NBC, because Hulu works fine in Internet Explorer. But, yeah, so we missed Heroes. We missed everything. We missed everything for Monday night. Now we got to watch it all online. And, you know, 24, you got to watch 24 because we got to see that before next week's episode.
Right.
And they're at a really good point in the story, too. Last week's 24 was fantastic.
Why don't you download it from iTunes?
What, I'm watching on a 3-inch screen? Why would I want to do that?
No, watch it on your computer.
Oh, yeah, I guess I could do that.
Although you do have to pay for it then.
Yeah.
It's like $1.99.
I'm going to pay for my television. But anyway, so that was my
I know your spending habits. You'd pay $1.99 to see the episode of Chuck.
Well, you're probably not Chuck because, you know, 24, there's more stuff that you really need to make sure you're seeing. You know, Chuck is one of those shows that you just need to make sure you get the story. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. But
like sci-fi stuff, you'd want to make sure you see the details.
Right.
You know, whatever. But anyway, so that was my worst entertainment moment of the week.
That is pretty bad.
Oh, it was bad. All right. So what was your best?
Okay. I'm embarrassed of my best.
You can change it. You haven't said it yet.
No, I'm going to stick with it.
Okay, good.
My best, though I never watched The Bachelor, I really felt a sense of revenge when Melissa appeared on Dancing with the Stars.
And didn't she trash talk him?
Huh?
And didn't she trash talk him too?
No, she was actually very classy about it. The judges and the host trash talked him.
Oh, okay.
And but what was great about it, she had 2 days to practice. She came on. Her partner was one of their best dancers. And 2 days to practice, and she was awesome.
Now, who did she replace?
Nancy O'Dell.
Who, I don't know who that is.
Tore a ligament or something. From Access Hollywood or Entertainment Tonight.
Oh, the blonde?
Yeah, well, they're all blonde. But,
oh,
yeah.
I guess so.
The younger Mary Hart.
Okay, right. Yeah.
But
well, you know, she's a cheerleader.
Who, Mary
Melissa
Hart?
Rycroft.
Oh, right. Right, and
Dallas
she did admit she
so
had a little like ballet history as well.
Yeah.
But
still, she's not a professional dancer.
You could tell. I mean, first of all, she's not a celebrity. So she's not Dancing with the Stars, and like the first thing you're thinking, well, she's not a star. I mean,
right.
that was a publicity stretch right there, or a stunt. She came out, and she was just, you could just tell she was so gracious to be there. And just like, it just, the last time you saw her, she was just so crushed that, you know, you really felt happy for her.
Doesn't it make you wonder all that much more what happened between her and Jason? Because during the whole Bachelor, she really seemed like the obvious choice because she's adorable. She seemed really sweet. She seemed nice.
Well, you know, he was on the Bonnie Hunt show with Molly, actually. They were on together. And Bonnie Hunt came down. Obviously, I watch a lot of daytime TV because I work at night. But she kind of came down hard on him. And he said that he regretted the way he did it. But when it came down to like what went wrong between them, he's like, we'd after, you know, I had chosen her and we'd be together. He's like, we just didn't have anything to talk about.
Well, how is that possible? How can you have tons to talk about to the point where you want to ask this person to marry you?
Right. Well, one of his things he said was, you know, they're in a setting, you know, they're in this beautiful tropical paradise. And so, you know, that kind of lends itself to, you know, to the whole experience. Whereas,
well, that just means he's a shallow idiot then, because
means
that he can't.
Don't we know that by now?
Well, I don't know. You know, it's so hard to tell from these things because you're talking about hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours of stuff distilled down into a couple minutes here and there.
Right.
So it's really difficult to tell, and you don't know how much is scripted. So, you know, you kind of have to give people the benefit of the doubt from that standpoint. But if you like somebody enough to ask them to marry you. And the only reason you did that is because you can't tell the difference between what's real and what's not real because you're at some place that's pretty, then you got to be one of the biggest idiots in the
completely.
World.
I agree completely.
So she did good. Our
she
little
did
Melissa
well.
Did great on Dancing
yeah,
with the Stars.
Very well. But, I mean, the best part about it was you could just tell that she was so appreciative to be there and, like, gracious and, like, just – and she did well.
Yeah.
And she was, you know – even while she was dancing, you could see she was very emotional. And then, you know, she kind of teared up at the end. And, like, I was touched. That was my touched moment of the week.
Oh, so your best entertainment moment and your touched moment of the week.
Yeah.
That's great. We are going to have a section 5. Okay, my best entertainment moment.
I'm afraid where most touched moment of the week will lead to, so we'll leave it alone.
Yeah, probably a good idea. So my best entertainment moment of the week was, without question, last week's Terminator, the Sarah Connor Chronicles. That episode was so good. I absolutely did not see it coming. Plus, there was some really cool stuff. There was some stuff that kind of implied that there were a couple scenes where Cameron was trying to fix herself because she thought that something was wrong with her arm. Because, you know, she's been had the crap beat out of her on a number of occasions by other robots. And they mentioned that, you know, John made a comment about how she was designed to, you know, kill humans and not to fight other robots. And so, you know, the Terminators obviously know how to self-repair. I mean, we've seen that even from the first movie when Arnold fixes himself. But she asks John to help him, and you really start to get the sense that there's something going on with this particular Terminator model, because it seems like she really actually likes John Connor.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know how that's even really possible. So there's this great scene where somebody's coming to look for Riley at the Connor's house, and so Cameron takes her out back into the barn where John was fixing her before. And Cameron's like going twitchy crazy, like her hand is twitching, and she keeps saying to Riley, "What am I going to do with you? What am I going to do with you?" You know, because she sees Riley as a threat, but John has also told Cameron she's not allowed to touch Riley and not allowed to kill her or anything. And so it's like this weird, you know, you see this weird stuff going on in Cameron's mind that's like the robot programming is trying to fight itself because she knows she should kill her, but she's been told she can't. And, you know, none of them know why Riley's really there except for Jesse. None of them know that she's there from the future. They all think she's just this kid that John met in school.
Right.
And it's great because Riley's terrified that this Terminator is going to kill her. And so she keeps reminding Cameron what her cover story is. She keeps saying, "You're not going to do anything with me because you're just John's sister. You're just his sister. You can't do anything. You're just his sister."
Right.
And it was a really, really intense moment. And then Riley, you know, figures out that she's supposed to die and goes and confronts Jesse, and Jesse shoots her dead. And it was just a really
shoots her dead.
It was a really, really intense hour of TV, and it was really great. And I hope that the DVR numbers are enough to keep that show going, because it has turned into a really great TV show, and it deserves to stick
around.
Well,
don't you think it'll pick up a little steam with the new Terminator movie coming out?
I don't know. I mean, that movie is not, you know, tied to the TV show in any way.
No, but I mean,
it's tied
still
more to the movie canon than the TV show canon. And they're pretty similar. Right. You know, I don't think they really violate each other in any significant ways, but man, it was a great episode. And that's it.
That's it. I got nothing else.
Neither of us have anything else. So thanks again for tuning in. Remember to subscribe if you haven't on iTunes, and leave us a review if you don't mind. Find us on Facebook. And if you want to send us a message, you can send that message to podcast@pause.com. So thanks again for listening, and we will see you next week.
Bye-bye.